This week's Survivor Feedback Show with Jessica Leese is sponsored by Pro Flowers. I, too, have a secret advantage that I have to give away to somebody else, and that's 20% off of an order of $29 or more at proflowers.com. Just use the code REALITYSPACETV to save 20% on all bouquets, $29 or more at proflowers.com when you use the promo code REALITYTV. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now, here's the guy who's also known as Mr. Smarty Cargo Shorts, Rob Sesternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast voicemail edition for episode number 5 of Survivor Heroes versus Healers versus Hustlers. And I'm very excited to have this person back with me on the voicemails that I have podcast with her for many years about The Amazing Race. And we just recently have started podcasting about The Walking Dead. Please welcome the great Jessica Leese. Jessica, how are you?
I'm great, Rob. I'm excited to talk about this episode. It's a lot of fun.
A lot of fun stuff to talk about. We're coming off of the heels of my interview with Brad and Monica. And while we had a lot of fun with Brad and Monica, that wasn't the most strategic podcast that we've ever done. So I am looking forward to, I have some thoughts about the game, including I may be reversing my position on something that I thought from the know-it-alls after a second viewing of the show. So stay tuned for that, Jessica.
Wow, what a tease.
A tease, yeah. How are you doing, Jessica?
I'm doing great. I think there's so much that we can talk about this episode, and I can't wait to see what the listeners want to know, because there's a lot of things I personally want to know, and they're much better at coming up with questions than I am.
Okay, so we have a lot of stuff to get to. Of course, we had the Survivor Know-It-Alls earlier this week, and then also my exit interview with Rourke is all posted on Rob Has a Website. You can subscribe. RobHasAWebsite.com/iTunes. And if you missed it this weekend, be sure to check out the RHAP B&B and Why Rourke Lost with David Bloomberg and Jessica Lewis. So Jessica Leese, also, you can catch her on our Walking Dead proper recaps, which is now going to, we're recording this on Friday, but by the time you're hearing this, you should be able to be hearing our Walking Dead recap for episode number 2 over on post-show recaps as well. All right, Jess, so we'll get into everything from this past episode, but Survivor 35, overall, you into this season?
I am. I have to say, and I'm going to give 100% of the credit for this to Josh Wigler, but I came into this season feeling so attached to this cast and feeling it's really one of the better casts we've had in a lot of seasons, and feeling really connected to everybody, enjoying getting to know them all better. I feel like I've really got a handle on what's going on, and while the early episodes tend not to be the most strategic, I'm kind of enjoying the ride anyway.
Yeah, I think that it's a very fun group. And I think that if you take a look at this cast as a whole, everybody is, you know, a really strong casting choice, especially of the 13 people that we have that are, you know, moving forward on the show. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I feel like that there's a lot of times in cover. I mean, this is not my first rodeo covering a Survivor season. I feel like it's not uncommon for there to be a lot of the discourse to be, well, this season is boring or this season sucks. And I feel like that a lot of times people are, you know, it sucks until it doesn't. And I feel like that we should probably give these Survivor seasons a little bit more the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, and every season has its ups and downs. You know, there's not even the best season of all time. There's going to be a couple of episodes in there where you're just like, yeah, get on with it. Like, this is a filler episode to get to the exciting stuff. And, you know, you just have to kind of weather those things. I think there's something fun, especially on rewatch, there's something fun about every single season.
You know, two things really could be happening in a Survivor season where you're sort of like losing major characters. And that's usually when you get your pop in terms of like, oh, that was a great episode. Can't believe that person ended up getting blindsided, or those major characters continue on into the season. And I think that we are having a season where, you know, we we have most of these major characters end up moving on. And so at some point down the road, we're just going to get a run of sort of like these big players going out, you know, one after another. So I think there's still a lot to look forward to here in Survivor 35. So I would say that I am buying stock in Survivor 35, Jess.
Yeah, I'd be buying as well. I think it's setting up, like, the chess pieces are getting arranged on the board for there to be a very exciting middle game and end game.
Yeah. All right, Jess. So let me go back to Rourke and her exit interview. How did you think Rourke did on the exit interview?
I was really pleasantly surprised by Rourke on the exit interview because I feel like she's one of these people that really got short shrift when it comes to the editing. I think there was a lot to her going into the game, and she was obviously a super fan, and you know we love our super fans around here.
Mm-hmm.
But we saw almost nothing of her just because she was in that tribe that never went to tribal council, and then all of a sudden she got the one episode that was kind of about her, and prior to that, almost nothing. It was really great to hear from her. She seemed like she had a really good strategic head on her shoulders. Very self-aware, I thought, very articulate about what her long-term strategy was. And I thought it was great to hear from her.
Especially when you have a character who does seem like somewhat self-aware and not sort of super eccentric like some of the other characters that, you know, will like dominate the screen time, whether they're going to tribal council or not. I do think it's hard to find a foothold for that person until they're going to tribal council and sort of like in the middle of these votes.
Yeah, I would agree with that. She was really kind of outclassed in terms of strong personalities on her tribe. And I think when you've got like a total insane person like Joe overshadowing you, and you also have the kind of side stories, you have a showmance that you're competing with, a showmance, a crazy person, an idol. And, you know, secondarily, you have Mike out there. She's really kind of the bottom of the power rankings on the Healers tribe.
Okay, so let's jump into the plight of Rourke, and we'll start off with a question whether or not Rourke could have done anything differently.
Hey, Rob, it's Phil, and I have a question about our new robbed G.Otis Rourke. Obviously a fan favorite among the community because she's one of us, so my question is about what she said on the way out, where she said that she doesn't necessarily blame the swap for her leaving because there is always something that you can do. Is that always necessarily the case that you can get out of any situation using social game, or sometimes is your fate just destiny? Thank you very much.
So in the episode, Rourke said in her final words that there's always a way out, that she doesn't believe that she got screwed by the swap. In my exit interview with you, I did think that she walked it back, but also might have been kidding about that, that she, upon further review, she did get completely screwed by the swap. So what is your final verdict on this?
I think Rourke got dealt a very bad hand.
Yes.
Nobody's going to dispute that. But one of the things I really admired about her in her final words and also in her exit interview, where she did kind of walk it back, but she did take a lot of responsibility and say a better player could have found that in and figured out what they could have been doing differently. And I saw one thing in particular that really stood out to me as something that she could have been doing differently. And that was she wasn't cultivating relationships with everybody on the new tribe. And there was a lot of back and forth where Chrissy didn't talk to her until the day of the tribal council. And that's not great for Chrissy's game. But on the other hand, the phone works both ways, guys.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she could have been cultivating that relationship with Chrissy. She could have been reaching out. And that was kind of the biggest hole I saw in what Rourke was doing. I mean, insofar as we saw anything of what Rourke was doing, because, you know, we didn't see as much as we could have. I really feel like you know, if somebody's not reaching out to you, you need to reach out to them. You need to make those relationships happen. You need to kind of insinuate yourself in and get into their head so that you're not the person they're thinking that they can get rid of.
You know, I can definitely empathize with Rourke sort of like trying to do the Monday morning quarterback on it and try to think about like, well, what could I have done? Because, you know, I have certainly done that myself with Survivor All-Stars, where I go back to a group and I certainly, you know, there are people that say to me, well, there's nothing you could have done, though that group was going to target you no matter what. But then I think about, well, what if I could have done this? I could have done this. So I think that you can really rack your brain and come up with a million different things that you at least say to yourself, boy, I wish I would have tried that. I wish I would have tried this other approach that I didn't end up doing. So when you end up in a situation like that, and you end up sort of like getting blindsided in the first time that you have a chance to go to a tribal council and vote with a group, it is frustrating because you think about the different things that you could have tried. Even though you made at the time all of the moves you thought were best, it's a frustrating thing to sort of try to audit in your mind.
Yeah, that's true. And it's also, you know, it's not straight up logic governing anything anybody does out there. You're dealing with complex personalities and you don't have full mental capacity out there. You know, you're hungry, you're tired, you're dirty, and you're dealing with a lot of unknown factors and a lot of behaviors that you can't fully predict. So I think Brooke might have been, you know, a little too hard on herself out there, but I did kind of appreciate the candor. It's something you don't hear from a lot of survivors, that she's taking full responsibility for what she did. Yeah. I thought that was kind of cool.
I think that probably the thing that I and myself that I have thought about this in my own experience in Survivor All-Stars is that I think the easiest thing to sort of second guess is, boy, I wish I would have been more proactive in making sure we won immunity that day. And I think that maybe if I was her, the easiest thing that you could point to of if I could be able to fix this is when Chrissy is struggling in that challenge, get out there. Okay, give me the reins. Give me a shot at this. I want to get in there. At least let me have my destiny in my own hands, because I'm sure everybody knows this, you know, backwards and forwards. But in the challenge where I ended up going home in Survivor All-Stars, I was sitting out in that challenge. And so on the review, it's especially frustrating to think that, boy, if I was in there, maybe I would have had a shot to be able to, you know, change destiny and get three more days, and then you never know what could happen. So I do feel like that is a thing when you are in that position where you are unsure. If you don't have like 100% sure an idea of what's going to happen in these swap situations, I think then you need to not even, you know, gamble with the chance that you could be going to tribal council.
That's true. But I think at that point, maybe, you know, hindsight's 20/20. I got the feeling Rourke didn't realize that she was in any kind of danger.
Yeah.
Which is another flaw in her game that we could talk about.
Well, this is a question that came into us by email from Feifei. And Feifei says, what do you guys think about the Rourke comparison to Kelly Wentworth? They both went out fifth, yes, but if ever there was going to be another second chance season, do you think that Rourke should be the one that deserves it? Kelly's story for second chance was that she was swap screwed because of Dale. What's Rourke's story? Because she said that she doesn't blame the swap for her elimination, but somehow in her exit interview, she thought it was because that she found out about Chrissy and Ryan's relationship. Thanks. Do you think that, is there enough there? Do you feel like that if Kelly Wentworth ended up having this story, and I don't know necessarily was it that she was screwed by her dad, if that was necessarily the narrative at the time, I felt like it was more that, you know, she had this upside. Could you see Rourke potentially being considered in that same sort of slot?
Well, Rob, Kelly Wentworth had one thing that Rourke is probably not going to have. And I think you may have heard me expound on my theories behind Survivor Second Chances in the past, but I would chalk up Kelly Wentworth's return to Survivor 100% to one factor. and that is Ms. Survivor.
Well, I asked Rourke about that. She said, don't bring back Ms. Survivor.
Okay, well then Rourke's going to have a problem.
Well, I don't like to say that Kelly Wentworth because of Ms. Survivor, because I think that doesn't give Kelly enough credit.
I think it's not just that Ms. Survivor was a thing. It was that Kelly Wentworth took the opportunity with Ms. Survivor to launch this social media onslaught, and she was able to harness Ms. Survivor to kind of launch herself back into the spotlight in a way that caught CBS's eye and put her in the running for second chances. I 100% believe that she might have found another opportunity to do that, but that was the reason.
It wasn't the only factor, but it was, you know, twofold, where it really, she was able to, you know, get her name out there at the right time. And then also she was able to almost not necessarily, but like build her email list of people that like for this grassroots campaign, which just so happened to be right before there was another time when she was going to have to get out the vote.
You can look at it. We had three Mr. Survivor finalists and three Ms. Survivor finalists. There was a winner on each side, and then the other four ended up going to Survivor Second Chances. Mm-hmm. Plus, you had the Fishback Factor. It was kind of a moment that coincided with, you know, Survivor kind of testing the waters for crowdsourcing their casts and RHAP being at kind of a peak. And
at a peak? What do you mean by that, Jess?
Hey, we're getting better and better all the time, but we were the only game in town at that point.
Yeah, okay.
And right now, everybody has a podcast, and I think at that time, you could point to one social media outlet that wasn't Survivor's official channels as the place where fans were congregating, and that was a big draw. And I don't know, absent something like that for Rourke to harness, if she's a really good social media hustler, she could probably get herself back in front of CBS, but I don't see it happening otherwise.
Yeah. Well, I do think that she has the hustle. I think that they could do a lot worse than bringing her back in terms of somebody that would make the most of their second chance. So I would be all for it.
Yeah, I'd be for it too. She's very smart. I liked what she had to say. I think if they're casting a season and they're running out of young, cute girls, she's going to be on their list. She's not going to be at the top of it, but enough people decline, she sneaks into that spot and she could make another Wentworth run. Absolutely.
I also think that, you know, any sort of passiveness to her game, I think, would be gone. I think she would come back and, you know, play a bit more aggressively. And I think that that also plays into her hands of bringing her back.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's true of a lot of people. And I love nothing more than when someone comes back for a second chance and then plays a completely different game.
Okay, so let's talk about this big decision from this week's vote, where Ryan was the swing vote and he decided to vote against his ally, Allie, and vote with his other ally, Chrissy. Here is Jamie in Massachusetts.
Hi, Rob. Hi, Jessica. Jamie here from Massachusetts. Now, in this episode, Ryan was in the unenviable position of having his two closest allies on the tribe be voting in opposite ways. Either way, he was going to piss one of them off. The thing is, the way he chose, Allie gets to go back to camp and say, "I'm pissed," and work against Ryan, where all Chrissy would have been is hashtag pissed in Ponderosa. Now, why would Ryan choose to piss off the ally who was going to stay in the game with him? I would love to hear your thoughts. And love being a new patron, by the way. Thanks.
Okay, bye. Thank you, Jamie. Thank you. Jess, what are your thoughts on the decision that Ryan made at that tribal council?
Well, I think it was the right call, honestly. I think there's always a chance, like if you piss somebody off in the moment and you don't vote them out, as long as you don't totally blow up their game, which I would say this decision to vote out this person that they haven't been with from day one, that probably was strategically kind of dangerous down the road, I think he can explain away that decision and he can do damage control with Allie. And then he's got two potential allies left in the game, whereas if he burns a bridge and votes someone out that was aligned with him, you know, then he's got, maybe he's got a tighter bond with the people that are still in the game, but he's also got Rourke, who he's not super aligned with, and he's got, you know, he's got no big power moves, and he's also, that's one fewer person that might work with him, and you never know what's going to happen in the game. So if you have people that are kind of lukewarm to good with you, then you have people that you can bring in as a tighter bond, and he's going to be able to talk to Allie, and he's going to be able to say, you know, I had reasons for doing this. He can make a good case. He can bring her back in, and he hasn't totally torpedoed his relationship with her, I don't think. So he's got Allie. He can bring her back in, and he's got Chrissy, who he doesn't have to explain anything to. I think it was okay.
All right, well, let me give you the counterpoint. Luke writes in and emails, was it a mistake for Ryan to not vote out Missy? He knows that Missy has the fake idol. She may try to use that fake idol as a way to pull in allies down the road.
What does Muffin think, though?
Who's Muffin? Sorry, that really made me laugh when I read it in my inbox. So, Jessica, on the know-it-alls, I felt like that this was a bad job by Ryan to not get Allie on board with this plan. And I thought, you know, I didn't really feel strongly about whether or not he voted against Rourke or voted against Chrissy for his game. But I felt like it was a big mistake to not get Allie to be on board with him. But I rewatched the episode and I sort of like had this sort of epiphany where I think that you're right. I think that Ryan made a really good move in this tribal council. And look, I agree with you. I think he did a bad job with Allie in terms of, you know, making her happy. But I do think that he is going to be able to get her back on board and get her back into the fold. And you know what? If not, she'll be the next person that's voted out of the game.
Yeah, 100%.
What leverage does she have?
Yeah, she's got nothing to bring to the table. He's got all the cards.
She's the next one out in that group if they go to another tribal council.
Sure she is.
Yeah. You know, we're looking at Allie as sort of like the hub of everything in terms of like a Cassandra in with this group that she's in. And now, you know, without Rourke in that group, I mean, she's definitely 4 out of 4 in the power rankings. And so I don't think that she's in the best position. So if she doesn't like it, you know, that's tough for her right now because that she doesn't have another option.
Yeah, it's true. And I mean, you do look ahead to the merge, but by the time merge time happens, you know, there's going to be a little bit of game between now and then, and anything could happen.
Yeah. Well, here's why I like the move so much for Ryan. And this was something that I had talked about. I'm not sure if it was at the end of last week or if they're watching the episodes, but I really believe that at this point, the way that all of these pairings and cross-tribal alliances are working, that I believe that in this game right now, the merge is going to be a battle of the healers versus the hustlers and the heroes, where we have the cross-tribal alliances. They're all between a hero and a hustler. You have Devin and Ashley. You have Ben and Lauren. You have Ryan and Chrissy. That's all three of those people that are sort of have something going on across tribal lines is a group of heroes and a group of hustlers all working together, where the healers have been much more insular. The only place that we saw any sort of cross tribal alliance was between Allie and Rourke. And I think that even though Ryan may not have the full picture of everything that's going on, knowing what we know, that was actually a smart move to end up because you took out a potential number. Rourke was talking to Allie about, hey, you could join up with us. And yes, that we saw that Ryan was going to be part of that, but he was going to be, what, 7 out of 7 in some sort of group of healers plus Ryan and Allie after the merge, whereas in this group of hustlers and heroes, that, I mean, who knows where Ryan is in the power rankings if you were going to rank that group, if we end up with, you know, all of these like mismatched pairs of heroes and hustlers together. But you got to figure that he's probably in the top three out of whatever sort of, you know, he's tight with Devin, he's tight with Chrissy, he knows Lauren. So I feel like that he's probably in a really good position. And then they've taken Rourke out of the game. That's a number that was for the healers. And now Allie is at worst a free agent who's going to join the ranks. Well, how could she? No, but she doesn't even know any of the other healers. So she's really just has no other option than other either fall back in line and get with the hustlers, or she's going to be one of the next targets.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. I mean, or put it another way. If you can rate your closeness with everybody else on your tribe, like if you can assign a numerical value to it, and then you average those all together, and that's kind of like where you are within the tribe, you want to get rid of the, you want to throw out your lowest score, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm Ryan, I look around and I evaluate my, yeah, exactly. I'm going to look around with everybody else. I'm going to figure out who I've got the lowest score with. And if that's the person that goes out, my stock goes up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What did Rourke have to offer him? Not a whole lot. What does Allie have to offer him? Slightly more than Rourke does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So she can come back to him. He's her best option still. And when the merge comes around, she's probably going to be inclined to stick with him rather than jumping over to somebody she doesn't even know.
And I don't know if Ryan knew all this. I mean, there's no way that he could have known, okay, unless he's like looking across and figuring, okay, Alan got voted out and he can sort of figure, okay, well, I bet Devin is working with Ashley and the heroes are sticking together. Again, I'm not sure if he'd be able to figure that out, but he might be able to look over and see, okay, Ben and Lauren are probably working together because there's two of them versus three of the healers. And Chrissy might be like telling him like, oh, you know, Ben's a great guy. I loved working with him. And I think you'll really like him when we get to the merge. So there might be a little bit of talk of that, but I think that probably what the reason why he made the decision he did was, you know, like I was saying on the know-it-alls about that, the idea of the sunk costs of, okay, I've already got all this invested with Chrissy where she has this idol and then we could use this and we have this bond. And I think he's probably most excited about that. But just sort of like from the worldview of what we can see in the game, I really think that he ended up making the right decision.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no way he ran all of those scenarios in his head. Nobody's that good. Mm-hmm. Like we are not that good.
We're okay.
And we have, yeah, we're okay. But we've been eating and sleeping and showering and
sometimes
we're like sort of close to that good.
But we have small kids that, you know, affect our sleeping schedule. So, you know, that we can sort of relate to the survivors.
Yeah, we could definitely relate. I got 8 hours last night and it's the first time in months.
Yeah.
I know I'm bragging.
Okay. This is an email from John Kay, who says, with Ryan going against Allie and voting out Rourke, would it be a good idea for Ryan to go and tell Allie about the fake idol from day one and try to bring her in with him and Chrissy? Is that in the realm of possibility, or would Allie be too scorned to even think about it? What do you think of this, Jess, as an olive branch to end up bringing Allie back into the fold as a number and saying, okay, there's something you don't know. The reason I voted with Chrissy is because we shared this advantage earlier in the game, or do you think that it's too risky and that she is potentially going to blow that up?
I like this because we've been hearing from various channels that the theme of the season, apart from the manufactured one foisted upon us by the producers,
was it foisted? Was it foisted on us?
It was sort of foisted.
Yes.
One of the main narrative threads that we're supposed to expect this season is one of secrets. Like, who has information? How do they leverage it? What are they, you know, how are they trading it? And this is a piece of secret information that could certainly be used to pull Allie back into the fold if you let her in on this in a way, but you have to do it correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to take a lot of finessing. I think Ryan and Chrissy have to handle it together. And they have to present it not as, we were keeping this information from you and you were not in our club, but now you're like the newest rookie member of our club that can get our coffee.
Mm-hmm.
They have to find a way to bring her in a way that makes her feel valued and trusted. But I think this is a piece of currency that Ryan could certainly use if he uses it the right way.
I think that he definitely could do this. And I actually wouldn't be surprised if this happens in the next episode. But just, I don't think he should do this. I think that this is the kind of thing where, yes, there's going to be some sort of short-term advantage to be able to take the sting off of what happened. But to me, this is like no different than Cole going around and telling everybody, okay, hey, just so you know, Jessica has this thing. And so using somebody else's secret, because technically, it's not really Ryan's secret at this point. Yes, he knows about it, but it's almost like he's diluting his currency of information by telling Allie, who could then go around and tell more people about what's going on. She could tell JP, and then if everybody knows about it, the only way that the fake idol has any value is if people don't know it's a fake idol. And you feel like at some point down the road that maybe Allie could end up flipping, you know, that she could end up sort of like being indoctrinated into the healers that, oh, hey, Desi, Rourke told me that you were her ride or die, and we could work together. I'm so mad at all those guys for what they ended up doing to Rourke. So I think it's a bad idea. I don't think that he should tell Allie what's going on.
I think if he goes about it that way, you're definitely right. I think there's a way he could do it. I think it's going to be really, really hard for him to bring it to her in a way that doesn't feel like I'm letting you in on my game to get me further. And I think it would help him if he has a really good reason to bring to Allie about why he did not vote with her. And this at least provides context. And I think a piece of this story, certainly he doesn't have to go into like the whole Chrissy has a fake idol thing. He can say, I found a game advantage on day one that I had to share with somebody from another tribe. I shared it with Chrissy and I felt like I could trust her. This has proven to be true. And this is why I went to her and why I had worked with her. And, you know, at least to explain his actions a little bit, she might feel a little bit less betrayed. But I don't know. I think it would be hard. I think you are right that if you don't do it the exact right way, it is a mistake.
Well, I will say that I think the one circumstance I think that maybe this could be a good move is if they are going to go to another tribal council. And this group wants to this, or for whatever reason, Chrissy ends up feeling like, okay, I'm telling you, JP is a liability. He's going to end up back with Ashley. He is going to be a threat to win challenges after the merge. Let's vote out JP, but we need to make sure that everything is smoothed over with Allie and she's a solid number we can count on after the merge. And I don't necessarily hate that because that JP Ashley power couple end up reuniting once you get to the merge, then that might be an interesting way to bring Allie into the fold and have her as a solid number where then you're going to vote with her. You're sharing this secret with her. It ends up sort of like forming a bond between Chrissy and Allie where it doesn't look like there was one. So that might be a good way to go.
Yeah, I do like
because
that.
Allie's at the bottom. I mean, there's no, if you're going to potentially, she might go to the next tribal council. There's really no point in like letting her in on the secret if you're going to vote her out next.
Oh, sure. Yeah. And she's really not going to have another option at that point.
Yeah. It'll be interesting. I think that that's going to be a group to certainly keep an eye on going into the next episode. So we've talked about this a lot from the perspective of Ryan and now from Allie, but let's talk a little bit about Chrissy because this was definitely an interesting episode for her. Let me bring you this question that is from Matt about Chrissy and her relationship with the other women so far this season.
Hey, Rob, this is Matt from Louisville. Do you think Chrissy's inability to work with any of the women on the show so far will have an impact on her game later on down the road? Love listening to the show. Have a good one. Bye.
Jess, have you found, is that a thing? We saw that Chrissy and Katrina did not necessarily get along. I would say that if anything, Chrissy and Ashley were just sort of a neutral. They did not seem to get along particularly good or bad. And then Chrissy and Rourke definitely seem to rub each other the wrong way. Do you think that Chrissy is a player that is going to struggle working with the other women?
I don't think we have enough data for that to make that call. I do think it's interesting that she does seem to gravitate toward the men on her tribe to cultivate alliances, but I don't think that necessarily we have to say she's got a problem talking to other women, because we've seen her have okay relationships with, you know, at least with Ashley. And I haven't seen her have any outright conflict with Allie. Like, we haven't seen her interact with enough women. And, you know, I think you and I would have voted Katrina out. Like, let's be real. She was a little bit batty.
Keep shining.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure she's a lovely person outside of Survivor. If I was on an island with her, 100%, she would have been my first boot target as well. Mm-hmm. I think we just haven't seen her interact with enough women to say definitively that she has a woman problem.
Mm-hmm. So I want to get your take on Chrissy in terms of her edit so far this season, because I really did start to see a lot of anti-Chrissy sentiment out there on social media, certainly after this episode. And I was having a hard time parsing whether it's because, you know, obviously Rourke has a lot of supporters that are out there, but was it sort of like pro Rourke sentiment that was anti-Chrissy, or was there something that changed in the way that she was portrayed on the show? This is a voicemail for you from Ralph in Sacramento.
Hi, Rob and Jessica. This is Ralph from Sacramento. I noticed that there was a big change in the edit regarding Chrissy this episode. I found myself seeing her as more smug, annoying, and really arrogant compared to the previous episodes. Just wanted to get your guys' thoughts. Have a great day. Bye.
Okay, Jess. Well, here's what I want to know. Did you feel like that there was a marked change in Chrissy's behavior, or do you think that there could be some gender bias at work here, where here is a female character on the show and is targeting another female on the show? I don't think that she was particularly OTT in any way in this episode. Is that just something that when we see it on the show from a female player as opposed to a male player, that it ends up rubbing us the wrong way?
Well, it's really interesting, Rob, and a couple of things are going through my head before we even touch the gender stuff, which I guess I should just resign myself like as the appointed RHAP ambassador for all of womankind. We know it's going
to
come
and
up on the
podcast.
I don't
mean to put you in a difficult position, because I know I also understand that people will be upset that we even broach the subject. But I don't think that it's out of bounds to discuss this, right?
No, it's definitely, I'm not saying it's out of bounds. I think it's funny that it always does seem to come up whenever I do the voicemails. But I want to make a more global, like, I want to zoom out for a second. I want to observe how interesting I think it is that we have long since stopped just watching Survivor in a vacuum and trying to figure out based on, you know, the personalities interacting and the moves people make. And we've started to think about it in such over time in such a more meta way, where we're all looking into the edit and trying to figure out, well, this person isn't shown at all, and this person is being just portrayed negatively, so that means they can't possibly win. And just adding this extra layer of, like, not just what is the story being told, but how is the story being told. And I realized this season in particular, that's how I'm reading the show now, is not just any one of these people could win, but after the first episode, I know already half of these people can't win. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just fascinating that that's how we look at things now. Like, we're reading the edits so closely. So that's my macro statement. And now we can come back to this. First of all, I thought, watching the story, it didn't feel like this was Chrissy's story this week, which was why it kind of surprised me when I saw this negative reaction about Chrissy's moves and Chrissy's attitude, because this really felt to me like it was Ryan's call to make.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there may be a little bit at play, and we have had a lot of characters that kind of fall into Chrissy's character type, that when they make particular moves and behave in particular ways, the audience doesn't respond well to it, and the other contestants don't respond well to it.
Mm-hmm.
Because they expect her to behave a certain way because she's a mother and because she's an older woman and she's supposed to be sweet and nurturing. And I think there is a little bit of inherent bias there where you assume that's how she's going to be. And we know, based on information that we have that the other players maybe don't necessarily have, we know ourselves that that's not the kind of person she is. And I think everybody just kind of on both sides, both on the in the game and as the viewers, we tend to subconsciously punish her for not being what we expect.
Right. You know, it's interesting also, you know, Cass said, I think after the first episode, that playing the game from the middle-aged woman's position is one of the hardest things to do. And I do wonder if, like, hypothetically, if this had been, say, Allie that was targeting Rourke in this game, if then we would have seen, like, the same stuff happen, and it would have been a lot more sort of, like, yes, queen in terms of what she was doing. But as an older woman, it ends up being seen as something that's more negative by the viewers.
Yeah, I think Cass is definitely onto something there. And it also, it kind of slays me that when the show premiered, when I first started watching Survivor, I was not old enough to apply.
Mm-hmm.
And now if I were to, God forbid, ever be a contestant on this show, I would be the old mom.
I don't think you'd be the old mom. You'd be a mom.
Yeah, I would be the middle-aged woman, though. Mm-hmm. And I'd be in that, like, toughest spot to play in. And it does kind of hit a little close to home watching that, because I think, and I think it's true, like, you might get a better response if you're a younger woman. But then again, you might not. You might get the sort of, like, why do women always have to cut each other down and be catty? And you get a little bit of the Mean Girls thing going on if it is, you know, two people from the same cohort targeting each other.
Yeah. I mean, there definitely was a change in terms of the perception of Chrissy after this episode. I had gone to the CBS Survivor Facebook page. I saw people referring to Chrissy as the mean mom after this episode. I mean, this probably didn't help.
I'm outsmarting Miss Smarty Pants.
No need to for the name calling.
Yeah, that was a little unnecessary.
Probably.
Yeah, and I honestly did not love the way that Chrissy acted toward Rourke, but that was not because I expected her to be everyone's mom. It was just because on a human level, that was kind of a crappy way to strategize.
Like, yeah.
She was a bad strategist this episode, you know, independent of her demographic.
Yeah, it just felt like in terms of the episode that there was some animosity there, and it seemed to, like, bubble over very quickly. And I think that as viewers, we had not gotten really a hint of any sort of friction between these two up until, you know, sort of like it all unfolded after the loss at the challenge.
Yeah, and I mean, how hard would it be? There has to be a confessional of one of the two of them saying, yeah, you know, I haven't really talked to her. I don't know what she's like, and I wonder why she's not talking to me.
Yeah.
That would have gone a long way towards setting that up, and it didn't feel earned.
Well, last week, we didn't even get anything from that camp other than Chrissy was working with Ryan. I think that was the only scene we even saw from that new tribe after the swap. So we hadn't spent a lot of time with them prior to them losing the challenge. So, you know, again, a lot going on with the three tribes.
Yeah, it's true. I think when you have three tribes, it's really hard to give everybody fair amounts of airtime, which is also why I didn't feel like we really got to know Rourke as well as we could have.
Okay. Jess, do you feel less confident in Chrissy the player after what you saw this week?
100%. I don't have any problems with, like, any of her attitude things, but she did make a big strategic blunder, or she was at least depicted as having made a big strategic blunder of not having reached out to everybody on her tribe and not having cultivated relationships with everybody. And I think it's setting Chrissy up to be someone who maybe doesn't have as much social game as she thinks she does.
You know, I also think it's interesting where we have this long history of survivor duos that sort of complement each other's weaknesses. I wonder if the Ben-Chrissy pairing just happens to be a little bit of a better match in terms of like lining up their strengths and weaknesses than, say, the Chrissy and Ryan pairing, where they probably have like a more similar skill set.
Yeah, I think that. I think that's a fair thing. And I think maybe conversely, I'm really anxious to see more of the Ben Lauren dynamic.
Yeah.
Because I think the same thing might be happening in the other extreme.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, that's fun. Let's then play a question. This is from Eddie, who wants to know if Chrissy reminds you of another female TV character who seems to have a lot of more alliances with the male characters in her world.
Now, I might be a little bit off the ranch right now, but Chrissy reminds me of Madison Clark. Not only do they physically look very similar and their facial expressions very similar, but their blunt approach to the social game, she's pretty cutthroat and seemingly willing to do whatever she has to do to survive. She's also on a tribe with an ally, and they are all stranded on an island. Thanks.
Jess, do you see any parallels between Madison from Fear the Walking Dead and Chrissy?
Yeah, I could see it. I think that's not totally off the ranch. If I were a betting woman and I was putting them both in a survivor scenario, I would say Madison gets voted out a lot earlier than Chrissy does.
No, she's a survivor. She's going to figure out a way to get it done. I've got Christmas planned already. Ben's coming. Ryan's coming. Rourke is not invited. No Miss Smarty Pants. At my Christmas dinner, I can make a mean duck. Lauren can catch some crabs. That'd be great.
Yeah, she's going to be enjoying Jeremiah Otto's head at Ponderosa.
Katrina is not welcome. She cannot come.
Well, in the inevitable off-season podcast where we do Survivor Fear the Walking Dead versus Walking Dead,
yeah,
you wait and see. Madison's going out pre-merge.
I'm a hero. Trust me. Saved a lot of lives. Killed a lot of people, too. I'll do it. I'll do what it takes. All right. Let's get back to more Survivor proper. Actually, here is a question from the Ally side of things. This is Ben from New Zealand.
Hi, Rob and Jessica. It's Ben from New Zealand here. When Ryan didn't tell Ally what he was going to do this week, it made me wonder, have we had Ally wrong all along? She's had a lot of confessionals and she's been really articulate. And as a result, we've all been thinking she's playing really well. But looking again, it seems like Simone really wanted to work with her more than others. And then Patrick was at college with her. And so she voted out two people who might have been loyal to her to keep Ryan, who was more loyal to Devin on the old tribe and is now more loyal to Chrissy on the new tribe. Has Ally been getting this wrong all along? I'd like to hear your thoughts. Cheers.
Okay, I think this is a pretty interesting question because I think that universally, Ally has gotten a lot of praise for being a really good player through the first 4 weeks of the show. But with sort of the hindsight of how Ryan ended up choosing Chrissy over Ally, should we go back and revisit those other Hustler tribal councils to wonder if maybe Ally should have kept Simone and Patrick into the game?
Well, I think we were shown pretty good reasons to get rid of both Simone and Patrick.
Right.
I'm not prepared to say that Allie has been making strategic mistakes.
Yeah.
I think I would be more inclined to say that she may not have been the driving force that we initially thought she was when it came to these two moves.
Yeah. There's also a couple of, you know, not perfect arguments that are brought up in Ben's call, with all due respect. I don't believe Ryan was on the chopping block in any of these conversations. I guess, really that first vote between, the conversation was Simone or Patrick, and then the conversation was Patrick or Lauren. So I don't know if there's a scenario that you can come up with where both Simone and Patrick stay in the game and are potentially in this game at the point where we have the tribe swap.
Yeah, I think that's probably accurate. And I think when the tribe is strongly talking about getting rid of one particular person, you don't continue to stick up for that person if you, you know, without knowing for sure that you can sway the tribe. And so at that point, it's better if you are in good with everybody, it's better to get rid of the one person that everybody else seems to be wanting to get rid of. Like, just kind of go with the flow and let it happen rather than, you know, fighting to keep Patrick around, who rubs everybody the wrong way.
Yeah, I just wonder, though. I think that the Simone thing, okay, I get that. If we're going to say, okay, well, why didn't she keep Patrick around, who was going to be loyal to her? So let's just forget about Simone. But Patrick versus Lauren in the game, and I know that, okay, well, Lauren's not on her tribe anyway, but I just go back to, in the three tribe version of the game, is it almost better universally, no matter what, forget about who is going to help the tribe win or tribe unity? Should you just be looking at it of, is this person going to vote with me or against me down the road? Patrick is going to be with me. We have this connection. Should she hold on to that like it's gold?
Not if he can't work with anybody else,
mm-hmm.
because you need more than two people to win a game.
Yeah. I just don't know how tight Lauren was going to be. And so you end up in these situations where, you know, a swap is coming. At least I have a number that I can count on, you know, no matter what. Maybe it would have been the same with Lauren. Unfortunately, it just, we thought that she had that with Ryan. And it turns out that this might have been the one circumstance that she didn't have that with him.
Yeah, I think that's fair, but I also think that doesn't mean she can't have it again.
Yeah. I think it speaks to the intentional Matt Singh, Jess.
It's possible. It's
although
very
then
possible,
you have a chance to get swapped into a situation where you're the Rourke, where you're the one person who doesn't have anybody from their tribe, and you end up being sort of an easy person to pick off. But we've never had it where it's the tribes of five, where normally we've had it where we end up with 18 and then we swap at, you know, to two tribes of seven, and you end up, okay, well, for both like a Malcolm and Denise, or even like a Sarah Lucina, who ends up in a situation with a 3-3-1, where the person who's the one ends up being more of the swing vote than the person that ends up being targeted.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's always more interesting when you swap with odd numbers.
It's just like it makes it a little easier for you in that intentional Matt Singh situation where you're in a group of seven or six as opposed to a group of five.
Yeah, I think you always want to have as much room as possible to play.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the stories that I could certainly envision for Allie is she could have a little bit of the, you know, early game, like maybe Michaela Bradshaw 1.0 upside, where you think she's kind of running the show and she's playing a strong game, but she's really just kind of portrayed as the driving force in the early stages and is cut down fairly early.
So, Jess, we've spent all this time talking about the new Soko tribe, but let's switch gears and talk about the Yawa tribe a little bit. And here's a question. This is from Matt from Winnipeg.
Matt from Winnipeg here. In a season filled with showmances and pairs, are we underestimating Jessica and Dr. Mike as a pair? I saw him kiss her on the cheek. I saw her slap him on the bum at the immunity challenge. I'm not going to say showmance, but I'm pretty sure it's a showmance.
Okay.
What do you guys think?
All right. Jessica and Dr. Mike are not a showmance, that I'm pretty sure that Dr. Mike's hall pass is not Jessica. So that we let's not even get into are Jessica and Dr. Mike a showmance. But do you think, Jessica, is there a possibility that we could have a situation where Jessica and Dr. Mike end up becoming the real strategic pair and Cole sort of gets pushed out to the side?
Well, this is something you were kind of touching on at the Know-It-Alls, I believe, where you were saying that there aren't very many showmances where one of the showmance partners gets jilted in favor of another strategic partner. Like, people tend to stay with their showmances through the duration of the game. And I would be all for it if we saw kind of a Brave New World here. And I think it's really interesting. I think Cole is just dim enough that you could kind of keep him around as your strategic side piece. And he would feel like he was very much in control of everything.
Wow.
Where meanwhile, Jessica and Mike can be doing the strategic thinking and kind of deciding what moves to make. And Cole can just kind of be, you know, he can be their butch. He can be voting with them and doing whatever they want.
So interesting. So you have this pairing of Jessica and Cole, who are this, you know, tight, showmantic pair. That's his dream girl. But here comes Dr. Mike weaseling his way out and pushing Cole out to be the third wheel, a.k.a. hashtag cuck Cole.
I wasn't going to use the term, but okay. I can see it.
Hey, if the shoe fits.
Yeah, I think it's actually pretty good, because you want to feel like you have a solid alliance, not just with your showmantic interest, but also you need other people. You need more than two people to play the game.
You can't take your eyes off this guy.
He's sneaky, sneaky. I love this, actually. I love Cole being pulled along as like the eye candy.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Like, okay, we'll put him out in front. He'll be like the meat shield of this group.
Totally.
And,
yeah.
And then, you know, watch out. Now it's Jessica and Dr. Mike are the real strategic force here.
Yeah. You know, you kick back and you look pretty and we'll do all the hard work, Cole.
Yeah. And we won't tell you any of the secrets because you have a big mouth.
Yeah.
Tell everybody everything.
I think Cole's going to be a bigger liability if they keep telling him stuff. So I think they just need to, you know, give him enough shiny things to keep him distracted.
And peanut butter.
Let him vote with them when it comes to be voting time.
Right, right. And then I guess just hope that he doesn't get hurt too badly.
Yeah, I mean, he could certainly end up injuring himself.
Speaking of players injuring themselves, Dr. Mike, we saw him find the idol, but I do not believe it was a straight shot for him to go and find the idol. Just, did you watch the secret scenes from this week?
I have not had a chance yet.
Okay. All right. So that we have a secret scene about Mike before he found the idol, went all around the island, you know, shades of in the beginning of the game. Now he doesn't have Joe following him around. So he was able to really be able to sort of like rip the whole Yawa camp apart now, looking for the idol. And unfortunately for Dr. Mike, he ended up running into a nest of wasps. Here is Dr. Mike finding the secret wasp nest.
Oh my God! Ah!
Oh dear.
He did eventually find the idol, but not before he was stung 3 times by wasps.
Oh dear. Well, that's no good. Yeah. Nobody likes that.
Yeah. He had to go directly. Maybe that's how he ended up finding the idol at the well. He went directly to the well and then just started, you know, pouring water over his head so the wasps would stop stinging him. Watch out, Dr. Mike.
There were a couple of people that died in the Hunger Games that way.
Yeah. Yeah. The Tracker Jackers.
Yeah. Someone saw the nest off onto his head.
Yeah, not good. Not good.
Not good.
Okay. Jess, let me take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. And those are friends over at Pro Flowers. Look, we're talking a lot about romances that are going on Survivor and, you know, things that may be not necessarily trending in the right direction in those romances. But if you want to keep your relationships going in the right direction, there's nothing better that you can do than sending flowers to that special someone, especially this fall. ProFlowers has so many perfect gifts for anyone this fall. A long-lasting bouquet in everybody's favorite fall colors. Their best-selling cinnamon cider roses are a great option for a birthday, anniversary, any fall occasion, or one of the classics like 100 autumn blooms or a dozen autumn roses. You can't lose no matter which bouquet you choose because our listeners get 20% off any ProFlowers unique bouquets of $29 or more. Can you believe it? Yes. Yes, it's true, Jess.
You know who really loves flowers? Wasps.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no wasps on these flowers. Trust me. ProFlowers bouquets are guaranteed to stay fresh for at least 7 days or your money back. And you control the delivery date. And ProFlowers will give you more bloom for your buck than even the RHAP B&B. Big, beautiful flowers, more stems for your money and long lasting freshness. We got some of these. Nicole really enjoyed it. Nicole is a tough customer to please. They're on my dining room table right now. They look great. To get 20% off all the bouquets of $29 or more, go to ProFlowers.com. Use the code REALITYTV at checkout. That's ProFlowers.com. Use the code REALITY space TV. Okay, Jess, let's stick with the Yawa tribe. I have one other question to ask you. So one of the things that Rourke had brought up in her exit interview with me was that she thought that one of the ways that she could have been saved was that the Yawa tribe could have been out there potentially throwing a challenge to get rid of Ben or Lauren. And to go back to another past season of Survivor, back in Survivor Worlds Apart, I believe it was the final vote before the merge when we saw one of the tribes end up throwing the memory challenge in order to vote out Joaquin from the game, Jess. Do you think it would be in the best interest of the Yawa tribe to make either Ben or Lauren this season's Joaquin dead? The Joaquin dead, Jess. Bro.
That's...
Bro, don't throw the challenge.
That's something else, is what that is.
So happy to get a Joaquin dead hashtag back in the mix. It's been a while. That was actually from way back during the premiere of Survivor Worlds Apart. I believe it was the feedback show for that episode. And Josh was doing the voicemails with me. And we first were talking about the Joaquin dead after that first episode, after the neutral box of did he have a chance to move forward. But now we're talking about the Joaquin dead as could we see Yawa, should they throw the challenge and vote out Ben or Lauren at this next tribal council.
So in other words, should we fear the Joaquin dead?
Yeah, well, should they fear the Joaquin dead?
No. Well, it's a great show. It's coming back. They're going to reboot it. It's going to be great. Trust me. I made it.
Well, you know, Ben is no stranger to ranches.
Right, right.
But I think this is kind of a stretch. And I know that we probably set this all up just so that we could make the pun and play the song.
So you've listened to the podcast before.
It's not my first rodeo.
Right. I don't think they will do it, but should they be thinking this way? Should they be doing this?
Well, I think Ben might be the biggest threat out there, but I don't think anybody's going to realize
that. Dr. Mike has said numerous times that Ben, including a secret scene from last week, that he says that Ben is the biggest threat out here. And I know that because I want to give him the $1 million, but I want the $1 million more. So I need to make sure he doesn't walk off with my $1 million.
Well, but again, we have to kind of zoom out and get a little meta here. Why is this not in the show if this is something that's a valid option?
Mm-hmm.
Why is it relegated to a secret scene? I think if this was something that people were seriously discussing, We'd see it on screen. Well, we wouldn't have to go to the website for it.
Now, Dr. Mike, you know, fears Ben in the game, but has that group talked about throwing a challenge? That I don't know. That, you know, but should they? Even if it's like something that's not even on their radar, is that a good move for this group? Because, you know, if you go back to my theory of if it is healers versus the hustlers and heroes, healers need to pick off some hustlers and heroes. I think that this is a huge missed opportunity for them if they are not even exploring this idea. If you could take Ben out of the game, then potentially you're looking at going into the merge of 12. You're still down, but, you know, potentially you could just have to swing over one person to end up having a group of six voting with the healers.
Well, that's assuming you're going to merge at 12. Is that a given?
It's not a given, but I think it's kind of a given. It's like seventh episode. I'd be surprised if they didn't merge at 12.
Yeah, I think that's where it looks like it's heading, but... You know, what happens if you throw a challenge?
Then you vote out the other one. Vote out Lauren next.
Yeah, okay.
That'd be great. That would actually be better for them.
I can see the appeal. Like, if they were going to Tribal Council, I can see the appeal of targeting Ben. But I don't see the appeal. I think you don't throw a challenge to get rid of someone unless you have like a 2,000% compelling reason to get rid of someone, which I don't think they do with Ben. I think he is a threat, but I don't think he's threatening to blow up everybody's game tomorrow.
I think that they definitely should do it. I'm with Dr. Mike. And we've proven on this podcast that Dr. Mike knows what's going on, okay?
He's a smart guy.
Okay, so I stand with Dr. Mike.
I guess Dr. Mike knows when something might come back to sting him.
That's right. That's right. I wasn't sure where you're going with that. But back to the wasps. So, Jess, again, I don't have any evidence to point to the fact that if they're talking about throwing the challenge, but if Dr. Mike is afraid of Ben, that he is the biggest threat in this game, and now he's spent time with him, he's like, yeah, this guy is really good. He's really charming. He's really charismatic. I find myself wanting to give him the money. And you have a chance, you know, you have every opportunity now, you control the vote, then I think you got to do it. I think you got to take the shot.
All right. I can see the appeal of it.
Yeah. So I like that plan. And then you go into the merge. And if you don't, then you have the opportunity. You have two people that you could get rid of then.
It's true.
And you have the idol. Yeah, maybe he has the idol from the Heroes tribe early on. I mean, I guess that there is like some sort of a risk. But I mean, you have the idol from this beach.
That's true. And, you know, we never took off Ben's pants to see if he had an idol.
Yes. No idol strip search at this point. OK, this is sort of a little bit of a general Survivor question. I'm not talking about Rob DeCaneo, but this is a question for you, Jess, as a game show enthusiast. Jason from New Jersey thinks that maybe Survivor could be doing something wrong.
Hey, Rob, it's Jason Curtis from New Jersey. My question is dumb. When Jeff is revealing the rewards, I feel it's so anticlimactic that he reveals the first place award first and then the second place award. Is there any point in revealing like a lesser reward last? It feels so anticlimactic. Everyone's, you know, bored by it. Anyway, that was dumb. Bye.
Okay, just to give you a sense of what they do, that on Survivor, Jeff Probst will say, okay, want to know what you're playing for? Okay, we got pastry, we got coffee, we got all this stuff. Second place gets a pitcher of iced coffee. Should we be doing this differently? Should Jeff Probst come out and show people like, all right, let's see what you're playing for, okay? You got a pitcher of iced coffee. It's ice cold, refreshing, will hit the spot. And everybody's like, okay. is like, or if you win, we've got a pastry, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, sort of like on The Price is Right when they end up playing, I believe it is any number. They sort of like, oh, it's a dining room table. And they make it like that's the real prize, like, or a brand new car. And then the crowd goes nuts.
Yeah, I can see that. I think Jeff is kind of stuck on this idea of having a consolation prize. I don't think he likes it. I think he feels like there's one winner and then there's like one team that almost doesn't lose.
I like this. I think that, look, even if they only did it once in a while, where it's like, want to know what you're playing for? Oh, we've got some finger sandwiches for you guys. So, winner of this tribe, we got some cucumber sandwiches, all delicious finger foods. But if you come in first, we've got a 6-foot hero!
Yeah, I love this. And I love it if they just do it every so often just to mess with people, because you know people have to pretend to be excited about things. So I'm thinking all the way back to season one when he brought out the slice of pizza.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, the winner will get this slice of pizza. And it was like,
right,
among the nastiest pizza we've ever seen on the show. And everybody was so underwhelmed by it. And he's like, oh, and also I'll get out my cell phone and you can call home.
Right, right. But this would be that you get like your own Domino's pizza installed at your camp.
Yeah. Yeah. Something like that. Or like a fridge full of Coke, which I know you've had some experience right. with. But I would love it if he's like, all right, the whole tribe gets to split this congealed room temperature pizza. Everybody be excited.
Because people would be excited. Or like there was a time where Kathy, and the winner of this tribe will get a Snickers bar. And it's like, okay, you'd be pumped up for that if you were on Survivor. But the tribe that comes in first place, you get a wheelbarrow full of candy. Trick or treat.
Yeah. Yeah, and they would go nuts. They'd soil themselves. It'd be great. Yep, exactly that.
You'd be very excited. I like this. So good. I don't think this was dumb. I think this was a good outside of the box idea, Jason from New Jersey.
Reinventing how this game is played.
Yes. Okay.
So it's going to Samoa.
It's going to Samoa. I like this for the next think tank. Okay. This is a question. Okay. And I don't know if this question is going to Samoa, Jess. If you wanted a dumb question, okay, how about this one?
Hey, Robin, Jessica, Jason from Nashville calling. Last night before the reward challenge, Ryan started talking about how the coffee is not that great of a reward because it'll probably go right through them anyway. So I have a question for you. Does Ryan's talk about bowel movements exclude him from being a winner? I mean, we have our new talk about poo in your through theory. So what do you think? Is this the Survivor editors telling us that Ryan has no shot?
Okay. Jess, is Ryan eliminated from winner contention by the talk about poo and your through principle? Here was Ryan talking about the iced coffee.
Plus, coffee and tea to take back to camp.
Oh.
Fill you up and pick you up.
It's going to run right through us. I don't even care.
So the idea is that because he has now talked about elimination, he will now face elimination.
Face elimination. Now, hold on. Now, so Ryan obviously did not seem excited about this reward.
It's going to run right through us. I don't even care.
It's going to run right through us. So do you think that in some subconscious way, we saw Ryan actually completely blow that challenge? Do you think that his subconscious was causing him to lose the challenge, that he was already psyching himself out about the ill effects that the reward would have on him, Jess?
Well, if we're being real, Rob, that was the first thing I thought of too when I saw that coffee. I could see maybe, you know, the reward is supposed to, like, when you know what the reward is, it's supposed to drive you to want to win it. And I think there might be something to the idea that he saw that and was like, I'll save my strength for immunity. Don't really care.
Mm-hmm.
Don't really need it.
Now, the pastry, though. So you feel like that maybe once the first place was sort of out of the mix, do you think that then he was just like, look, I don't even want to do that to my system of get the iced coffee?
Yeah, sure. Like, I'm not sure. I'm not a coffee drinker. I probably wouldn't have a lot of it myself.
Okay. All right. I think that, what about the talk about poo when you're through? Are you buying that?
I'm not sure I'm buying that. I think we talk about poo more than people realize.
Yeah. And I definitely think that there have been past Survivor winners who have at least broached the subject. I'm not sure that who was the most recent Survivor winner to discuss the scatological.
I think this is an off-season podcast, Rob.
Paging Mike Bloom. Paging Mike Bloom. Okay. All right, Jess, let me give you another question. And this is from Allison, who wants to know about the big crossover event that everybody is talking about.
Rob and Jess, your mission is simple. You must create a Walking Dead Survivor 35 crossover event. You must cast one Survivor player into each of the Walking Dead communities. Who's cuddling up next to Negan, and who's sleeping in the trash piles?
Ho! Who do we got here? Who's coming over in the tribe swap?
All right, Jess, do you have any natural fits for any of the different Walking Dead communities?
We got to look at people that are, like, we need someone really down to earth to be in Alexandria, right? Yeah.
All right. So who would that be? Who would fit in well with Alexandria? We need somebody who can plant also.
Well, I think you got to put Ben in Alexandria then. You got somebody that's like, yeah, worked the land.
He'd fit right in.
He's got a good work ethic.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we need a doctor at the hilltop. So I think that Dr. Mike can fit right in there. So he could be the doctor at the hilltop.
All right.
We need somebody to go with the garbage people.
I think I will send Devin to be with the garbage people because he knows when something is not an advantage. And going with the garbage people certainly would not be an advantage.
That is not an advantage.
And I think his deadpan demeanor will fit right in with Jadis.
Yeah. And I really feel like somebody that would fit right in with the Sanctuary and Negan, I really feel like Joe would actually be a good sidekick for Negan.
I read your face. Thank you, baby girl.
Yeah. I think that he would fit in good with Negan.
Yeah, he's definitely, like, he and Negan both sorted into Slytherin. I think it works.
I want you to meet my new parole officer, Joe.
Okay. All right. Jess, are you ready to get into what the survivors are talking about on social media?
I can't wait to hear the song.
Tweets, baby, tweets, Survivor tweets. They're better than worming around face down on the beach. Tweets.
Yes. Thank you so much to Ryan Elder, the great composer of the Rick and Morty program. You can hear more of his music at Ryan Elder Music. And be sure to check out Ryan Elder's wonderful Survivor podcast, Snakes, Rats, and Goats. All right, Jess. So we'll get into everything from the survivors on social media. Have you noticed, are you impressed with the social media tweetings of these survivors this season?
Well, they seem to be really committed to tweeting. I think some of them I'm more impressed with than others. Some of them surprise me with how funny they are. And some of them I'm thinking maybe someone should take their phone away for a while.
Okay. Why? Is there anybody in particular you've been impressed with?
I think Cole is very funny on the Twitter.
Yeah.
And I was not expecting that.
Yeah. Cole posted on Twitter. I think he was off Twitter for a little while. I think he did not love being on Twitter during Survivor. But then he ended up coming back and he had like a bunch of peanut butter on his face in a picture. And he was like, hey, guys, what did I miss?
Yeah, he was bringing his GIF game. I was really happy with that.
So then a few other tweets from the survivors. We would love to follow what's going on with hashtag Figgy. Apparently she had to work the other night. She said, who's going to give me the play-by-play tonight? Hashtag working woman, hashtag survivor. That'd be like sort of a terrible way to watch Survivor, of just like sort of get the play-by-play over Twitter.
Yeah, well, I think a hilarious thing that happens sometimes is friends of mine who graciously follow me on Twitter, despite the fact that they have no interest in television shows that I watch, will occasionally be somewhere where Survivor is on and I'm live tweeting Survivor, and all of a sudden it clicks in their minds like, oh, that's what she's talking about. Okay.
They're living vicariously through your Twitter.
Yeah. Everything they know about Survivor comes from like my Twitter feed for an hour every Wednesday, and then they're never exposed to it at any other point.
That's
so
good.
It's a valid way to experience the Survivor world, I think.
Hannah tweeted about the scene where Desi was topless in the ocean. She wrote, the camera guy was like, zoom in on Desi bathing. We'll find a place to use this. Trust me.
Okay.
Yeah. That, you know, I was wondering myself if that was sort of like, is this out of context? But it did seem as though that it just happened to be while that conversation was happening. That's what was going on. It didn't seem like it was any like sort of like a funny business in terms of like the Dara bathing shot that got used like 8 times in Survivor Pearl Island.
Yeah, we've come a long way since then. I think like I didn't even actually notice that she wasn't wearing a top, but I'm not the target audience for that. Mm-hmm. So
okay, King Darnell tweeted out, "The lone lady has got to go. I'm sick of seeing her on my TV." So wow, Chrissy
Ouch.
Lost a fan in Darnell.
Ouch, man.
And Darnell is an easygoing guy.
Yeah, you'd think so. Like, I think he's pretty regular with regard to what he has to say.
I'm not smarting, Miss Smarty Pants.
Darnell was not here for it, Jess.
Nope, he was dropping some truth bombs.
And this was a great tweet that we pulled. At Joe Daly 4 said, Cole probably passed out because he was trying to hold in a secret too long. Is that why Cole is going to need medical attention in the next episode?
That could be. That's why he was eating all the peanut butter, too. He's trying to keep the secrets in. Like, it just kind of sticks to them.
Don't keep them in. That's bad. You got to just let them all out. Jess, I don't have any Rupert tweets for you this week. Rupert has been on a Twitter hiatus since October 4th. So, sadly, I have no Rupert tweets for you. But, Jess, I do have a game to play with you, Jess, that, of course, everybody is always waiting for the new Survivor seasons to drop on DVD, and 3 new Survivor seasons have been dropped on DVD this week, or at least announced.
Yay!
Okay. Jess, coming soon to Survivor DVD will be Survivor Game Changers, Survivor Ko Rong, and Survivor Millennials versus Gen X.
That's exciting news for
exciting
the DVD
news.
Completists.
Very, very exciting news. Have you seen the release of any of these DVDs?
I have not set foot in a DVD store since roughly 2009. So, no, but I will take your word for it.
Okay. Well, Jess, that of course, these DVDs are available not in a DVD store, but on Amazon.com. And we always appreciate when our listeners use our link for Amazon.com, which is robhasawebsite.com/Amazon, especially with this holiday season coming up. Always appreciate that. But Jess, that of course, that the Survivor DVD artwork is pretty standard, where we end up with 6 faces on the cover of the DVD every single time around. And sometimes CBS and Survivor make some curious choices in terms of who gets on the DVD box cover and who ends up getting snubbed.
That's the thing that happens.
That is the thing that happens. Okay. So with that in mind, Jess, I have a game for you where I am going to give you a number of survivors from the DVD covers of these new seasons of Survivor, which have just been released. And it's up to you to tell me which one of these survivors was snubbed.
Okay. I'm ready.
All right. All right, Jess, let's go to Survivor Game Changers, the most recent season of Survivor. And there is a DVD cover that has 6 faces on it. You tell me, who was the survivor that got snubbed from the Survivor 34 DVD box set? Okay. Was it A, Sandra Diaz-Twine? B, Troyzan? C, Ty Trang? Or D, Andrea Belkey? Who did CBS and Survivor leave off of the Survivor Game Changers DVD cover?
if we were playing This Week in Survivor History and I was going to go for the 2 points, my guess before I got the choices would have been Troyzan. And I haven't seen this DVD cover. Like, I really should be studying up on my DVD covers. But if I had to guess, I would say Sandra went out pretty early. But she's also a 2-time winner. She has a lot of fans. She was a reason a lot of people were tuning in. So I could see her being like the dark horse person that appeared. I feel like Troyzan was really like almost comically under-edited throughout the game and treated like such a non-factor that I kind of want him to not be on it. It's between him and Sandra for me.
Okay.
I'm going to say Sandra was snubbed.
Okay. And
the queen stays queen.
No, I'm sorry, Jess, that the queen does stay queen, and she is on the DVD cover. And
click, 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 click.
Said the editor as they were moving Troyzan to the not on the cover of the DVD pile.
I really got to start trusting my gut.
Yeah, you had it. You had it. You talked yourself out of it.
Yep. I got to take a cue from Darnell and trust my gut.
Okay. Yes. For the record, the survivors featured on the cover of Survivor Game Changers DVD are Andrea Belke from, this is from left to right on the top, Andrea Belke, Sarah Lucina, Ceree Fields, Ty Trang, Brad Culpepper, and Sandra Diaz-Twine in the bottom right. Okay, Jess, let's talk about Survivor Co-Wrong. The Survivor Co-Wrong DVD cover does not feature which of the following survivors? Is it A, Debbie, B, Sarge Jason, C, Joe Del Campo, or D, Sydney? Who did not make the cover?
My first impulse is to say Sarge Jason.
Okay.
Final answer.
Final answer.
You do you, boo-boo.
You can do you, boo-boo, but you are not correct, Jess. Sarge Jason is on the cover.
No pumpkin, no.
These sound clips are so confusing.
Yeah. Just listen to me. He is on the cover. You are incorrect, Jess. You have a second guess?
Who are my remaining?
Debbie, Joe Del Campo, or Sydney?
Let's go with Debbie.
Total blindside.
The total blindside of you, Debbie is on. She is on the cover.
Okay.
Very sad to say, Joe Del Campo not on the DVD box set of Survivor Co Wrong.
Yeah, they took one look at the DVD box set cover and said Joe's got to go.
Joe did not get to stay on the Survivor box cover. So sorry. Sorry about that, Mr. Del Campo. Okay. Jess, then this is a little bit different for Millennials versus Gen X. Okay. Which of these survivors is on the cover? So I'm going to give you three snubs. You tell me who made the cover of Survivor and Millennials versus Gen X, the DVD. Three snubs, one person who made it. Is it A, Sunday Berquist? B, Brett LaBelle? C, Ken Apparently? Or D, Michaela Bradshaw? Who was the person who made the Survivor Millennials versus Gen X DVD box set cover?
I'm going to go with Ken.
Okay.
Apparently.
No, he was snubbed.
Wow. He's a good-looking guy. He was a finalist.
Apparently not good-looking enough for the DVD box set cover.
Apparently.
Yeah.
Snubbed. Okay, then snubbed. Then I'm going to go with Michaela.
What? Yes, she did. Michaela made the cover. She made the DVD box set. Yeah, they do sometimes with the returning player. They will put them on the cover, even if they didn't go super far in their original season. So congratulations, Jess. You got one out of three.
Well, I'm glad I got one thing.
Actually,
right,
you didn't. You got 0 out of 3.
Multiple mulligans, I got one pity point.
Yes. A little bit of some Deese Ghoulish scoring on my part. You actually got none of them right on your first try.
There are some poorly worded questions, Rob.
I don't think so. I don't think anything was poorly worded there. All right. Of course, if you want to check out the Amazon DVD Survivor Collection, you can go to robhasawebsite.com/Amazon for that. All right. Jess, so much fun. I thought we got into some really good strategy talk in this podcast. Had some fun, too.
Yeah, this was a great time. I mean, I always love doing the voicemails. It's maybe my favorite podcast that I ever get to do, but I thought this was extra fun.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun going through it all. And of course, we will be back together on Sunday night after this week's next episode of The Walking Dead over on Post Show Recaps. You can subscribe to that podcast at postshowrecaps.com/TWD. iTunes. We also greatly appreciate your feedback and star ratings over in the iTunes store because it helps more people find the show. postshowrecaps.com/TWD iTunes. Jess, what is the hashtag today?
Well, I think the only thing that stands out to me, and I'm afraid we're going to attract the wrong element.
No,
with this.
No. Don't say it.
I was going to suggest that cut coal was the best thing we came up with.
The best thing we came up with, but that should not be the hashtag.
It really should not.
It should not be the hashtag. Would you consider hashtag poo in your through?
That's probably the lesser of two evils there.
Oh, it certainly is. There is also the return of the hashtag Joaquin Dead.
If we do Fear the Joaquin Dead, I'm back on board with it.
Fear the Joaquin Dead.
Joaquin, I need you to come back. White collar. Need you to DJ my Christmas party. My son Nick loves techno.
That's good.
Okay, we'll go with that.
All right, Fear the Joaquin Dead. All right, and of course, Jess, great fun to go through all of this. We got the Wiggle Room coming up. That's the next podcast you're going to hear. Josh Wiggler and I are going to get into everything with Gordon Holmes. Very excited to catch up with Gordon. We got the Wand Off coming up. Going to try to prune the Wand Off down. Boy, Jess, people love to give feedback on the Wand Off.
Yeah, the Wand Off. That was a lot. It's a lot.
It's a lot. People, some people said, we love the Wand Off. It's great. People said, no, well, you're killing me with the Wand Off. Cut it way back. I think we're going to pare it down a little bit. I think that even I left Josh Wiggler punch drunk by the end of the Wand Off this week.
Yeah, I saw him struggling towards the end.
He was struggling. I think at this point that we're recording here on Friday night, I think I already have about 10 or 11 Wand Off submissions.
Oh my God.
Sitting in my inbox. So I will go through them and narrow down the choices a little bit for this week's Wiggle Room. And then we'll get back into everything coming up with the Survivor Know-It-Alls this Wednesday night. And then we've got a great week of podcasts scheduled next week. David Wright is going to be here with me in the studio for the Survivor Recap. We've actually never done one of those. We did Know-It-Alls last season. We did an interview after Millennials versus Gen X, but we actually talked about Star Trek a couple of weeks ago, but we will talk about an episode for the first time together. And then on the voicemails next week, Paul Osleson, Survivor historian, will join us, winner of the original Survivor Hot Takeoff. He will be joining us to give us his hottest takes about Survivor HHH.
Yeah, you got back-to-back Montanans on the voicemails.
Yeah, not easy to do.
That is definitely not easy to do.
Yeah. And then Amanda Kimmel is coming up the week after that.
Really?
No. Stop. Please. Please. Yeah. Where that Amanda Kimmel is going to take your voicemails, everybody, next week after that.
She's going to take them and drive off with them.
I can't get her to take my voicemail, let alone listen to everybody else's voicemails. Okay. All right. Well, Jess, this was great fun. Follow Jess on Twitter. She is at Haymaker Hattie. Also, be sure to check out our cavalcade of Survivor blogs up on robhasawebsite.com. We have basically a blog that goes up every single day during the Survivor season. robhasawebsite.com/blogs. Looking forward to hearing your feedback. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.